At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Tommy, you know, we get to drive a lot of different cars, and we get to be confused by a lot of different automotive infotainment systems. So in this podcast and video, what are we talking about?
We are talking about the worst and the best infotainment systems in the industry.
Congratulations, you have now tuned into TFL Talk, where we discuss everything automotive, whether it's cars or trucks. This is the one place where you can be sure to get independent and honest reviews. Let's get back to the show right now. It's funny because I think over the last 10 years, I've figured out that car companies are good at building cars, but not so good at doing software.
Yeah, and when it comes to the modern day infotainments that control everything in the car, be it climate control, navigation, even how the car drives, how the car performs, it's important that you're able to go into the settings, go into the screen, and really quickly figure out how to navigate where you need to go. But unfortunately, some of the new systems are not so great.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk about first the best ones, the ones that we really like, and then the worst ones, the ones that we really struggle with. But before we get to that, let's talk about the two kind of industry standards, right? Android Auto and Google. I mean, Apple CarPlay. And those two, of course, are the ones that most people are gravitating to just because they basically mirror their phones. And so it's really easy, if you can especially do it wirelessly, to be able to use those for things like texting, you know, voice commands, email, playing music, you know, Pandora and so forth and so on. But we're not going to be talking about those two. You guys know how those two work. And that's what I meant. I mean, both Google and Apple know how to write good software.
But it's important to note that the Apple and the Google are great for entertainment, they're great for navigation, great for keeping you in the loop, but they don't control stuff like how hot your heated seats are, and what the interior temperature is, and how much horsepower in some cases your engine is making. They're just simply a way to basically communicate via your phone on a bigger screen in your car.
Yeah, but you know, Android's actually kind of branching out. So for instance, the Volvo system, which we'll be talking about, is based on an Android operating system. So they can do that, right?
Yeah, so in some cases.
Right, but Apple CarPlay and Android Auto sit on top of the infotainment system or incorporate into it. But in some cases, actually, Android is running the all that stuff that you just mentioned. But let's get right to it. Let's talk about one of our favorites, which is, Tommy?
Well, it's the Jeep and Ram system, and actually it's also used in Chrysler and other Dodge products, but it's called Uconnect. And once again, no company's paying us to say anything good or bad about their entertainment system or their screens.
No,
but genuinely, the Uconnect system is one of the best in the industry. And the funny thing is, Uconnect has been around for a long, long time. I think they're on the fifth generation of it, and they've all been great. There has never been a bad Uconnect system because they're simple.
Do you remember the old one? It was like little green and blue boxes, right?
I still think that was the most usable screen in the industry.
And you would pick like, you know, you would pick like satellite radio or FM radio, right? It was super easy.
I mean, it looked like something out of the 1970s.
Yeah.
And its design looks like something you'd find on a Commodore computer. But it was quick, and it was basic, and it was so easy to use. Here, let me find a picture of it.
Yeah, and one of the things I think that made it always such an easy thing to use is it's always been kind of touchscreen, right? There's never been like a mouse or a touchpad or a rotary dial or a little wizard's hat, right, where you had to go and access it. It's just always been, this is what I want, so I push on it, this is what I get. Now, we just drove the latest, actually the Durango, with the Hellcat power plant, which had the latest version of Uconnect in it. And right now, you know, at first, obviously it looked like something that Sega would have designed, right, like from the old Mario days, but right now it's becoming really powerful, and they're kind of working around the edges, right? They're not changing the functionality as much as they are changing perhaps, you know, the depth of colors, and the new navigation system in the newest version of Uconnect is really, really strong and powerful, and just bright and sharp. It's really becoming, you know, a really fun system to use.
I do think that the Jeep Dodge system from 2010, 2009 was still one of the best ever. I genuinely, looking at the pictures and I'm having a throwback on how simple it had a volume control, it had hard buttons down the side which allow you to navigate easier, and then it just had big, easy to understand graphics, nothing fancy, nothing that you'd be like, wow, look at the quality of that, but so they were reliable and
right.
They were super simple.
I misspoke, it didn't have hard buttons, I forgot about that, it's been so long now.
Yeah, along the sides they had the hard buttons, but it was still a touchscreen interface. It was great, I would absolutely love to have that system come back. But the current system, which is in most products, the Uconnect 4, very easy to understand. So what they've done is they've given you the shortcuts along the bottom of the screen. So if you want to go between radio, media, navigation, even CarPlay, you just click a button at the base of the screen and it takes you right to that menu.
Yep.
And then the menus themselves have these nice round or in some cases square icons that are easy to understand and very simple to click on.
Yeah, and we've got that big 12-inch screen in there, TRX, and you can actually divide the screen in half so you can like have the top half be, let's say, your audio controls and the bottom half be your navigation, and then you've got the hard buttons along the side. For instance, the stuff that you really normally want to hit, like the auto button for climate control, right, where you don't want to screw around and try to find, you know, how to turn it on or off. You also have, you know, like you said, the round buttons at the bottom, so you can navigate simply from audio to climate to, you know, anything else. And then you've got basically a page full of, like, apps. So if you want to get to the performance pages, right, to figure out, for instance, like, you know, what your steering angle is if you're off-road, or how much horsepower you're putting out, or how much, what temperature is on the intake of the supercharger, you can get to that via the performance pages. So it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's almost, I'm holding up my phone, it's almost like your phone in that regard.
Yeah, it's great, I love it. It's also quick, so some of those newer systems are pretty laggy, but Uconnect seems to be very quick and responsive. Easily, I think, my favorite in the industry. But should we go to another one that's pretty good?
Yeah, I think the next one, and we're going to disagree on this one, is a Tesla system. I think Tesla has actually done a really good job. Once again, big screen, very intuitive. You know, it's relatively straightforward to go between like audio and navigation and climate controls. Now with the Tesla system, there are no hard buttons for the most part, right? It's all done through the touch screen. And some of that can be, you know, relatively confusing if you're used to, for instance, having like a hard button that controls your headlights or your windshield wiper. I mean, they've taken and made everything digital. There are shortcuts, like there's a button you can push on the stock that will activate your windshield wipers, but for instance, setting how often they work or if they're on auto, same thing with the headlights, it's all done through the digital screen. And the upside of that is once you learn it, it's super easy and it's super intuitive. The downside is, and this is actually a real downside, it's not just theoretical, if the screen goes, then you're basically locked out of the car. And the screen is going on a lot of the early Model S's and Model X's, I believe. There's a recall, actually, where, you know, because so much is controlled through that screen, the car becomes dangerous and undrivable. Because let's say you're in autopilot, right, and your screen fizzes out. Then what happens?
Well, you'd hit the brake, and it would disable autopilot. My issue with the Tesla system is a little bit fussy.
Yeah.
So I have a couple issues with it. I just want normal buttons and switches for some
items.
They're
not there. And they're going actually away from even more buttons. So the next version, which they, you know, like a month ago, they unveiled, right? They're actually not even going to have like a drive stock that's going to be in the infotainment.
Which is ridiculous. I mean, I want buttons for the lights, light controls.
Yeah.
It's an important safety thing.
Yeah.
I want hard buttons for the wipers. There is one button to like activate a single wipe on the Tesla, but you can't control the speed on the stock.
Right.
I want a lever or buttons for the gear selector.
Which is going away.
Absolutely. I want a lever or buttons for the turn signal stock, which is also going away.
Now, it's funny. I think they're kind of... using a loophole in our government's regulations, because there is nothing that says you have to have a gear shift lever, right? There's no legislation that says you have to have a physical gear shift lever to go from drive to park to reverse. And so they're putting into the infotainment. It's crazy.
I do like how they also have the shortcuts like you connect at the bottom of the screen.
Yep.
So you can tap the fan icon if you want to get to the climate control. You can tap the little... eighth note if you want to get to the music. And you also have those little buttons at the bottom for like the defrost, which is good. So I think there are some good things. Hate not having a volume knob for like the passenger.
And I know you hate the air vent controls.
And I don't like the air vent controls on the Model 3 and Model Y, because you have to go into the screen.
And actually physically move them with your fingers.
And I'm not talking about the direction of the air in terms of like where it goes to your feet, where it goes to the windshield, but the central air vent that faces the passenger.
It's like on your phone, you use your fingers to manipulate.
It's just too much. I mean, I like the big navigation screen. So that brings me to the other thing I don't like, though. Tesla changes it. They change it.
Yeah,
they can push an over-the-air update, and it could look entirely different. And that happened pretty recently.
Yeah, and I wasn't happy with that. So it used to be that the screen was, you know, relatively big when it came to, let's say you've got 100%, right? Like 75% of it was controlling all the car's different functions, and 25% was that little autopilot that shows you kind of what the vehicle is doing, what the cars around you are doing, you know, what the stoplights are doing. And they made that a lot bigger. They made that like 40% of the screen. I don't like it. I like the smaller version of it better.
So what that means is it takes away from your usable experience with the car, because now the screen that shows you that you're in park or drive or reverse is 6 inches wide, and the actual screen that you interact with navigation and audio is now like 10 inches wide or something, or 9 inches compared to what it was before.
And by the way, getting rid of that gear selector lever, that's not something that's theoretical that's coming in 5 years. That's coming this year in the next updated, refreshed version of the Model S. So that'll be out this year.
It's supposed to be out this month.
Yeah,
it's coming out in March, apparently.
Yeah, it's coming out quick.
Yeah, so it's happening. Why would you want that? I mean, in what realm would you want the car? So the idea is, the car guesses which direction you want to drive.
Yes.
So in theory, you get in the car, you're in your driveway, the car will know to go into reverse. Pull it out of the road, stop. The car's supposed to know to go into drive. Why would you want that?
I am super curious about that. I can't wait to see how that works. You know, I'm hoping that it's not one of those like Tesla things where you're the beta tester for their new system. But I would think that Tesla has enough experience now in the last, 11 years to actually figure that out. But we shall see. I'm crazy curious about how that's going to work. You know, I mean, let's face it. Tesla has been leading the pack when it comes to all of this kind of stuff, right? The infotainment, putting that big like iPad-like screen, you know, either one way or the other, vertical or horizontal, into the car. And all the manufacturers have been playing catch-up.
There are some things that leading the pack is good with. The giant infotainment screen, awesome. Getting rid of dealers, I think, was a great move. There are other things that don't need to become a thing, like not being able to select your own gear with the lever. Why is that such a hard thing for modern society? I mean, first of all, we got rid of the manual transmission, which I kind of understand. The automatic's much more usable. Now Tesla's like, you don't even get to get a lever to choose your direction. We're going to do it for you.
Musk is working on like the next level of brain to computer interface, where you actually plug the back of your neck or head into the computer and you become one with the machine. So yeah, it's out there, but it's coming, and it is changing the game. People keep asking me like, hey Roman, you're a Tesla fanboy. No, I'm just not. It's fact. I mean, they are leading when it comes to a lot of this sort of thing, and you can see the other companies are playing catch up or copying Tesla. All right, let's keep going. What's the next infotainment system automotive that we like?
Well, the next good one is General Motors. So
it's very simple.
Yeah, and I'm specifically referencing Chevrolet here.
And not Cadillac, because that's probably the worst one, the old Q, but we'll get to that.
That's another story. So yeah. Chevrolet has a very simple system.
Like in the Silverado.
B- big round icons,
yep.
easy to understand. They have some smaller shortcuts at the bottom that are a little bit small, but for the most part, super easy to navigate between audio, phone, navigation, settings. It's pretty quick. The new system is now quite high definition.
Yep.
Not very flashy, but it works well.
And then they have hard buttons for like the climate controls, right? The HVAC stuff.
Those are typically below.
Right, yeah.
And then you have controls also, for the most part, depending on the vehicle, for volume and for tunes. So it's a great system.
I will give you that. I think getting rid of the volume knob is the biggest sin that an automaker, in my mind, can do in terms of their control layout. Honda did it, and I hated it. And I think they've got so much blowback that people are now getting their volume knob back. But we were recently, what was the car we were in that had the volume up and down? Oh, it was the...
The Mirai.
Yeah, we were in the Mirai, the Toyota Mirai. Instead of having a volume knob, they put like a little arrow button, two square buttons, arrow down, arrow up, and... Yeah, just keep the knob. It's so much more straightforward. And yeah, I know it's also on the steering wheel. We're not, you know, that stupid that we can't figure out. You can also do it on the steering wheel. But like Honda went and did this like weird slider bar on the steering wheel instead of just doing straight up buttons or rotary dials, and really made it unusable.
Honda got rid of the haptic slider on the steering wheel too. They put
a
toggle. So now it's up and down toggle,
yeah.
which was a good thing. All right, so the next system that I like, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think it's a good system, is the Toyota system.
Yeah, so that's a funny thing because I like the Toyota system and I hate the Lexus system.
Okay.
And the Toyota system, you know, the difference, of course, is it's, once again, Toyota, like anything else, does not lead the pack. They're always the most conservative company out there, so they figure out what works, whether it's mechanical or, in this case, you know, infotainment, and they stick with it. And yeah, they have kind of, it's very straightforward. It looks a little bit dated already, but it does work. And for the most part, they have kept hard buttons to control a lot of the other things. Now, Lexus, on the other hand, is completely, you know, lost in the woods. They've gone for a touchpad, and the first thing I have to do every time I get into a Lexus is change the sensitivity of the touchpad, because if you, like, even look at it or blow on it by accident, it jumps into different points of the infotainment system. I would say the Lexus system, Tommy, in a large part, sorry, Lexus, is almost unusable.
The good news is the newer Lexus system has gone away from the little pad. So on the new models, what they're doing, I think they did this on the new RX, is you still have the little touch-sensitive pad by the shifter, which can control the screen. But now you can also use your finger and use the screen as just a normal touch interface, which is a much better system.
Yeah.
So going back to Toyota for a second, Toyota's a little bit interesting because they use a bunch of different systems depending on the vehicle, but they're all pretty good. So like the Corolla is very different from a Camry, which is very different from like a Tundra, which is a much older system. But across the board, pretty much always have a volume and a tune knob, easy to use, not really great to look at. It's nothing fancy, but it's
it reminds
intuitive.
Me of like a 12-year-old video game.
Yeah, it's intuitive and it makes sense and it's easy to use. The Lexus system, if you can get past the touchpad, is a little bit confusing because they have this weird split screen thing where you can configure it to have navigation on one side and then media on the other side, and it's just kind of a mess, and the colors are all dark blues, and yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Lexus system at all. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and the Lexus system also has this haptic feedback, right? Where on the touchpad, you're supposed to be able to feel when you're touching a certain part of the screen, right? And it just jumps all over the place, and half the time you end up pushing the wrong button. The other thing, you know, that is a test, this is how I kind of test how a system works. You know, how hard is it to set my presets for my favorite radio station? And now keep in mind, guys, we drive, you know, a different car pretty much every day. And so it's different when you own the thing and you get to actually, like, learn it and use it on a daily basis. But how hard is it, this is my test, to figure out how to set a preset radio station or a satellite station? And if I have to go into like 14 different menus to do that, then I give up, because the old system was super easy, right? Back in my day, all you did was push the button and hold it underneath the tuner dial, and that's how you would set your presets. If I have to go in and, you know, select from a drop-down menu and scroll through and then designate it as a favorite, and then, you know, it doesn't show up as a favorite, and then it gets lost, you know, maybe there's 18 favorites and they're only displaying like six of them on page one, and my favorite just got saved to page three. It just gets to be too much. That's when you know it's like way too technical for, you know, driving and trying to stay safe on the road.
The Lexus system, I don't think it has the shortcuts constantly displayed on the screen like Uconnect, where they never go away.
Yeah.
It depends on which menu you're in. The only good thing I will say is there's a bunch of different systems depending on the year of the Lexus. Sometimes you get the little cursor dude, right? The little joystick,
yeah.
Which is better. I think the joystick is better than the touchpad.
Right.
And the good news is about the touchpad and the joystick is you still get a little mouse, essentially a little cursor, so you know where you're at relative to the screen. So when you move the joystick or the touchpad, when you slide down, the little cursor moves down one. Unlike something like the Acura system, which we'll talk about later, where you don't have the little mouse pad.
Actually, let's talk about it now, because it seems like Acura took everything that, the newest system of Acura's infotainment, took everything that was really frustrating from the Lexus system and incorporated it into their system. We just had, you know, a bunch of new Acuras, and I was amazed that they actually made it more convoluted and complicated.
So they're also using, we just drove the new MDX and the new TLX,
yeah.
And they have the same system. They also have a separate touchpad, just like Lexus, located down by the shifter, so nowhere near the screen. But unlike Lexus, they don't have a cursor. And the idea is, they have a name for it, but it's like a real touch system. So if I click in the upper left-hand side of the cursor, that same action will be displayed on the screen. So for example, if I'm trying to get to navigation, I see it on the screen, it's in the upper right-hand side, I just tap the upper right-hand side of this little itty-bitty touchpad and I'll go there. The issue is the touchpad is about 1 inch by 2 inches.
Yeah, it's this weird like little, it almost looks like a strip of gum, right?
Yeah.
Except not as long.
And then you're using a 1 inch by 2 inch touchpad to control a screen that's 15 inches big.
Yeah.
And that real-time touch-sensitive indication just doesn't work.
Yeah, and between that and going to buttons for a gear selector, it's super confusing.
So it would be like operating your phone if you had to keep your finger on the phone to select what you're trying to do.
Yeah,
because it's not that intuitive, and there's no mouse. So basically what you end up doing is you end up dragging your finger along this little touchpad constantly, trying to feel the point where you actually hit the icon you're trying to hit.
I would have loved to be in that room where like some Honda engineer proposed, you know what, let's not just change the infotainment system and make it completely different, but let's also change the way that you shift the car into gear and make that completely different. Like the two parts didn't actually talk to each other. I got this feeling that a lot of Acura buyers are going to be super frustrated because first they're going to have to figure out how to, you know, put it in gear. And you're saying it's not a big deal. You push the button. But once again, like GM has gone to a push button system, and it's very different from the Acura system, because on GM system, I think for reverse and for neutral or park, you pull out, right, instead of pushing in. Whereas the Acura system, you have to push in, it's like the Wild West out there. And God help you if you're my mom.
The other weird thing Acura has started doing is in the middle of the dash, there's this giant knob,
yeah,
which would make sense to be the volume knob, but you always go to reach.
But it's not
for
the
it.
Volume knob.
No, it's a dynamic control knob, so you can change the different drive modes, whereas the volume knob is typically nowhere near where you'd expect it to be. Sometimes it's down by the center, sometimes it's on top of the dash.
Audi. That was an Audi thing.
The other weird thing about the little touchpad is there's a second one next to it with two little parentheses, and that one controls this little sub menu that pops out from the side. It's just a mess. And funny thing is, I'm looking online right now. When it came out, like all these big outlets were like, this is incredible. And yes, Acura will try to explain it to you that it works and it's really intuitive, but it just isn't. Everybody I've talked to that's tried to live with it just really struggles with making it happen.
All right, let's go on to the next one. I think we've beaten that dog enough. Let's talk about the most improved system, and that's got to be Ford's, right? When Sync first came out, it was a hot mess. I mean, you know, not only was it not intuitive, really hard, but it didn't work actually. And then we recently had the chance to drive the new Mach-E, the electric car, which has the latest version of, is it still called Sync, or did they change the name of it?
No, I think it's a Sync 4, I think
Sync 4,
is the
Sync
name
5,
of it.
Maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
And it was really good, actually.
Yeah, they finally made it good, yeah. And even in the new F-150, the latest generation of that Sync is very good as well. I mean, overall, it's a little glitchy still in the Mach-E we had.
Yeah.
Like, I had some issues with the wireless Apple CarPlay initializing, but for the most part, far better than previous systems.
Yeah, the original Sync was just, like I said, it was a hot mess. People hated it. Actually, I think people wouldn't buy Fords because of it.
Well, I think it was made by or developed by Microsoft.
Yeah, just somehow the two companies didn't. You know who else develops these systems? BlackBerry.
Oh.
They're a huge supplier now for the automotive world. But anyway, the newest one, it's very straightforward. You know, you've got different pages. It's a lot like Uconnect in some ways, right? Where you've got big touch screen with like, you know, big buttons that do very obvious things, right? Once again, taking a page out of Lexus, I mean out of Tesla, not Lexus. And you know, once you learn it, it's pretty easy, very colorful, very crisp. Ours was a little glitchy and buggy, but you can see that they're actually onto something. So I'm going to give that one the most improved. I'm going to give the exact opposite to the least improved. You know what, Tommy?
What is that?
The one that actually started out, and it's based on Android Auto, so you think it'd be good, but it hasn't improved. That's a Volvo system. So Volvo, when it first started using it, which is now like 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago.
2015, yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. It was very much like an iPad, and you could swipe through different screens, right? And then each screen did something different. So you could control, you know, audio controls in one, like safety and convenience in the other. But they haven't updated it very much. In the latest Volvos I've driven, it's pretty much the same. It's starting to feel pretty dated. And the problem with all those screens is it's not easy to jump from one function to another. And so you end up kind of digging through a bunch of different swipes to finally get to the one that you're looking for.
Yeah, I've never found it to be all that intuitive. Whenever you have to swipe in a moving car, I really struggle with the swiping thing.
Yeah.
Swiping on a phone and an iPad makes sense, but the swiping in a car, I don't know. It's never worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. And Volvo, if you know, once again, if you want us to comment on your latest and greatest system, you got to get us a car to drive. So you know, you're invited to send us a Polestar. We'd love to see.
Because that's all new, right? It's got
yeah.
the brand new system.
Well, Polestar is different, and I think the recharge is a different system too.
Oh, okay.
Too. But you know, if you don't send them to us, we can't test them. So we're going to go with what we've done. And so, open invitation.
Yeah,
love to get our hands on a Polestar or a recharge.
It's not very good. The only thing I like about it is that it has a home button like an iPhone used to have, where you could kind of go to a default screen, which was a good idea, but not all that intuitive.
All right, let's talk about the Germans now.
Yeah, I think they've made big strides. So let's talk about BMW and the iDrive.
That's also most improved. So we had that i3, which had one of the earlier versions of iDrive. Not the earliest, like the earliest ones go back a long way. Those were just horrendous, right? It was nested menus and pages within pages within pages. It didn't have a back button. You remember that, Tom?
I remember, yeah. You were always struggling to fix a mistake you would inevitably make.
You couldn't go back. It was like the German were being very methodical in their functionality, which made it impossible to use.
I think iDrive kind of pioneered the idea of having the little rotary knob to control the screen. I think that was, and I could be wrong, but I think that was a BMW invention. So you'd have this little circle that you could twist left and right, and that would cycle through the different options on the screen. And then you'd push in to select. But yeah, the early ones were bad. Then they got pretty good, but for some reason they incorporated this, and some of them might still do, where they incorporate the little finger pad where you can type or draw letters,
yeah,
which no one has ever used in the history of iDrive.
No, and let's face it, your mom has a BMW X5, the latest one, so it's got the latest version of it. And it's actually got, if you're, look, the BMW system is, if you like BMWs and you learn the system, it's very intuitive. If you don't use BMWs and you get into it, it can be confusing. You're right. So the Germans did a couple of different things. And they mostly all the manufacturers did one of these things, but the ones that the Germans were big on was a little pad that you write on, which was like a cool party trick, but I don't know when you'd ever use it, right?
Yeah.
The idea is like, hey, I'm looking up my phone
contact
book.
You just draw a D.
Yeah, so that didn't work. And now they've gone into something even more silly, which is that like gesture control, where if you want to turn up the volume, you stick your finger in front of the radio and you turn it right, you turn it left, you pinch, do, you know, it looks like something that you would see in like Picard, right? If you watch the video series Picard, you see that the way that they fly the newest spaceships is by these virtual controls. I don't think we're anywhere near that. It just looks silly when you're doing it. It's much easier just to actually turn a physical knob. I don't know why you'd want to do gesture controls. So I'm going to give the BMW system it's in the middle. It's not horrible, but it's not groundbreaking.
For the most part, though, I think it works pretty well, the newest system. Fairly easy to navigate. You also have hard controls for volume, which is good. They have these funny shortcut buttons. So they look like preset buttons, and they can act as preset buttons, but you can also program them to hit like 4, And rather than going to country, it'll take you to a preset in the navigation system, which is weird. But those are totally programmable. At least they have some hard buttons there. You can even like swipe your hand over the various hard buttons, and it'll show you what it'll take you to, like what menu it'll jump to. And then there's also typically hard controls for climate control in BMWs, yeah. Which is a big plus.
Yeah, it's very kind of style over substance in a lot of ways.
I think it's not bad though, not as bad as it used to be.
So the other company, I'm going to go with Mercedes, right? They decided that they weren't sure like how you want to control it. Do you want to control it by touching the screen? Do you want to control it by using a finger pad? Do you want to control it by using a knob, right? And so they give you all those choices. Plus, the newest thing, of course, now is they give you voice controls. And dude, voice control has been the bane of my existence ever since it actually came out. Because with the first sets of voice controls, you had to learn basically a different language to be able to control it, right? There was this set of commands that would work, but you had to speak them in a very specific order. And if you didn't, it didn't work. So basically, the systems didn't understand natural voice control. And then what the manufacturers did was they actually, used what Siri does and what Amazon does, Hey Alexa, and they hooked the car up to the cloud and a very powerful computer. So now in a Mercedes, you say, Hey Mercedes, what do you think of BMW? And it'll reply something like that, the same thing you do. That's why I like seeing it in the rearview mirror. So they're trying to be now smart, and they're trying to have natural voice commands. I find it to be stupid and, not ready for prime time.
Well, at least it is a touchscreen, so you can operate it like
right.
a touchscreen.
But I'm saying the voice command.
And then the actual screen itself is fairly easy to use because you have these big tiles, and each tile kind of has a different job. So it's like a tile for performance pages, there's a tile for navigation, there's a tile for media. And then there's even these interesting different themes they're called. So there's like an adventure theme, which will set up the gauge cluster and the little info screen for different types of driving situations.
Yeah, so the Germans want to give you ultimate control, right? So you can control 18 different levels of steering input, 95 different levels of lighting, 895 different levels of audible sound coming out of the exhaust. It just gets silly and silly. So you can dive into the system and basically control the car. I want it to be purple inside. I want the exhaust to be quiet. I want the steering to be hard. It just gets overwhelming. And to me, when I see all that, it's like the reason you go to a restaurant is because you want a really good chef to create that perfect meal. The thing I don't want in a restaurant is like where I have to build the meal and then have them do it, because at that point it says to me that I'm doing it, right? I don't want to be the chef. I want Mercedes to be the chef. So that's how I feel. I don't want to have all that control.
But
I want the car to...
Once you get it set up, if it was your car, once you set it up once, I think you just leave it be, and then you'd own it for the next 4 years, and you would never touch the settings.
Yeah, so why? Why even have it?
Because then you can set it up exactly like you want it to.
Yeah, that's like some German engineer's dream of like some guy gets the car or gal, and then they spend 14 hours in the owner's manual trying to dig through how specifically they want to set this thing up. All it does is the beauty of really smart computers is they make really hard things simple, and this makes a really hard thing really hard.
I didn't like it at first, but if you spend a couple weeks with it, you kind of figure it out. It does eventually make sense to you. And the other cool thing, which is really neat, there's this little itty bitty square on the steering wheel. There's actually two of them, one on the left side of the steering wheel and one on the right side. And it's a touch sensitive square. It's about a centimeter by a centimeter. But they've actually made it work kind of like a little joystick, and you can use this little square to navigate through every menu on the screen. And for some reason, it does. If you have like a slightly bigger square, like on the Acura, it doesn't work. But if you have this little itty bitty square, put it on the steering wheel, the way it interacts with the navigation and the audio, it just kind of works, and it makes sense.
Does it forget that you're in a moving vehicle that can...
Well, it's on the steering wheel, though. I mean, it's like a little thumb control.
I get that, but you still have to look over, and completely 100% of your attention is now focused to changing the channel using this little thing, as opposed to like watching out for the woman with the baby carriage that's about to jump in front of your car.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the next system, if you listen to the manufacturer, they say they've made this system in such a way where you don't have to take your eyes off the screen.
What's that?
What do you think it is?
I don't know.
It should be great, but everybody hates it.
Are we doing the Germans?
No, it's not a German anymore.
You skipped the Germans. You skipped Audi and you skipped Volkswagen.
Hang on. Well, no, I want to see if you can guess this one. What's the screen that the manufacturer says is supposed to be much safer?
I don't know. Give me a hint.
It is Mazda.
Oh, I'm going to save that for the end, because that is by far the one that is, well, we'll save that for the end. Let's keep going through the Germans, okay? The Mazda thing deserves like its own show. But anyway, let's talk about Audi. So what Audi did, right, was they took all this complexity and they divided it into multiple screens. You know, which is what Porsche is doing too, right? I think Porsche now has up to 4 screens or 5 screens.
Acura did that in the old systems. They had a bunch of different screens.
Yeah, and so Audi divided into a bunch of different screens, and now you've got this issue where you've got the same potential information on different screens. So you have to decide where you want that information. And then to kind of try to simplify it, Audi used color coding, right, to specify different things. And I forget what the color codes are, but like yellow is like your phone, red is like, you know, like audio, you see what I'm saying? But you have to know what those colors are, and then you can easily, I guess, figure out that if you want to change the radio station, you go for red. If you want to mess with the phone, you go for yellow. It's also very complicated. It's split up a bunch of different screens. The latest version of that, which we don't know if it's happening, but the Grand Wagoneer, right, when we're looking at that one, had 7 screens, I think, including 2 in the back. So I think there were 5 in the front and 2 in the back. But the multiple screen thing is now getting a little bit out of control, right? So manufacturers have decided that you either have one giant screen or, to make it more ergonomically pleasant, you have multiple screens. And so, for instance, like in the Porsche Taycan, they have a screen, and in a Ferrari actually, in front of the passenger, and that will display things like how fast you're going, so that if you really want to freak out your passenger in the Autobahn, you can display how fast the vehicle is going. So what do you think of the Audi system?
I don't know.
You haven't used it?
I haven't been in an Audi in so long. No, they don't send us many cars out here, so
It's been kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I used it
very colorful
a year and a half ago, but I don't remember it very well.
The credit you got to give Audi is they went really early with Google Earth, right? So you, on the navigation system, you had the Google Earth superimposed over, you know, the street map, so you could actually see the buildings that you were trying to navigate to, which I thought was really cool.
So the other system, which is a pretty good system, albeit looking kind of old now, is the Volkswagen system.
Yeah.
Like in the Atlas. It's very basic. I like that you get 2 knobs. What I don't like is that the little volume, the little power button is, it's driving my OCD crazy because it moves when you turn the little volume knob, and it's never vertical. It's never in the upright position. But it's a good screen, big tiles that let you navigate. Big tiles that let you navigate between different settings, and there's kind of shortcuts for radio, car, media, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's fine. It works.
It's pretty basic, yeah. The other shout out you have to give that I really love on the Mercedes system is, this is cool, when you've got the navigation going in the heads-up display, it actually superimposes the name of the street and the arrows over the top of the navigation system. So it tells you, like, when you see the street, you'll see the street in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Go
cool.
Left on the street and go right.
Cool.
I think that's a really cool feature, probably one of the best features. And there's some other systems that do that as well. But yeah, big props to Mercedes for that one.
All right, should we keep going?
Yeah, you know, another favorite of mine is the Hyundai Kia system.
Very good. Yeah,
that's very straightforward.
It's not too flashy, but it does a good job.
Yeah, and it incorporates really easily with, like, Apple and Google. The cool thing, like, in the Kia system is, like, when you do the radio and you've got this old, like, it's not a real light bulb. It's more of a resistor, right? And it gives you the name of, the satellite radio station. I think that's really cool. The navigation is really easy. And we're not talking about navigation too much because, let's face it, it's just so much easier to use navigation in your phone, whether you like Apple or Waze or, you know, Google Maps. It's just so much more intuitive than having to use the one in the car system. So, yeah, I love Kia and Hyundais. I think it's straightforward. I think it's easy to use. I think it's intuitive.
They also use a lot of hard buttons. So the more hard buttons, in my opinion, the better. Almost like a normal old-school radio would be best. Go figure. But they have hard buttons for, like, typically for climate control, volume, tune. That's all good. So I think it's a good system.
Yeah. What else we got? We're kind of going through this haphazardly.
That's Hyundai Kia. Genesis is very confusing, actually. The Genesis system, I'm not a big fan of. They tried to make it really fancy, and it kind of fell apart.
Oh, Cadillac, you know, had the worst system by far, Q, with the haptic controls. Q was not only distracting, but it was painfully unintuitive, Tommy.
Yeah, it's
luckily
horrible.
They've kind of changed it up now with their newest. What do you think of the newest system they have?
Yeah,
we had it in
okay.
Escalade.
It's all right. It's not bad. I think it's anything would be better than QDaddy because they use these, like, everything on Q was a haptic button. Even if it wasn't part of a screen, it was still a haptic button, and it was so bad. So yeah, the new system is pretty good.
Yeah, and especially with that big giant screen now that actually has cameras built into it. So we did a video, actually Nathan did a video where we took cray paper and covered up the windows of the Cadillac on a closed course, of course, on a racetrack with no other cars. And then he tried to drive using the cameras that were displaying the road ahead onto the, and it's a little disorienting, but I think he was able to do it slowly.
It was funny to watch for sure.
And they're also the ones that actually put the directions onto the, overlay the direction onto the navigation system.
Yeah, Q was terrible. That was such a bad system. I think that was probably one of the worst ever made. But Cadillac has definitely improved it in the last couple of years, so big props to them.
Okay, all right, let's keep going.
I think we're pretty close to all of them.
I think we probably missed some.
I'm sure we missed some.
We haven't had a Porsche in a long time, so I'm not too familiar with that one, so I think we'll have to skip that one. That's part of the, and we won't talk about.
About Land Rover?
Yeah, what about Land Rover? Land Rover is, we have a Defender, and they're trying to be cutting edge, right? So they're trying to make the system be, I would say, almost like too cool for school, right? Mm-hmm. So it's got different icons for different functionalities. And the problem with it, it's always been that the ambition of the system has lacked the processor power of the hardware. So it always tends to be just a little bit like too cutting edge. And when you actually end up using it, it tends to be glitchy and slow and non-responsive at times.
I agree, yeah, and it's been an issue for a lot of years, and it's gotten better, but it still is sometimes it just won't respond to your commands on the first try.
Yeah, we can talk about cameras because the latest one, the Defender, has really cool camera tech. In the first one that we bought that failed, there was a module that went out that actually killed all the cameras. But what it does is it allows you to do like a virtual rendering of the vehicle so you can see 360 degrees. It's almost like watching, somebody using a camera that then walks around the vehicle and gives you all these different views. And that's hard to do when you've got fixed cameras. Some of the cool features are it'll like let you look through the hood. So if there's a rock or something underneath the wheel that you normally can't see because you got this big hood in the way, you can actually see it using the cameras. So they're really pushing what the technology can do. If it works, it works great, but if is a big problem there.
A lot of the Range Rover products now also have the dual screens for climate as a separate screen as well. They're always just not, they don't feel crisp, if that makes sense. So you really gotta work them to get them to go where you want them to go. So I'm not a big fan of them, but they're all right. So a lot of these manufacturers use pretty similar screens to their parent companies. Like Mini is just a worse BMW system. Rolls-Royce is pretty much just a worse BMW system. A lot of like the super luxury brands, Bentley, fairly similar to the Audi, Volkswagen Group systems.
Right, right. They're using basically the company. So we're not going to get into all these
Same
products.
Thing with like Lincoln is pretty similar to the Ford
system.
Yeah,
exactly.
But what is the best system and what is the worst system currently on sale?
The worst system is Mazda's.
Yeah, so Mazda, and actually, the Mazda PR team came out and scolded us journalists, and they said, we've done the research, and if you spend 7 to 10 days with it, it actually makes sense. And what Mazda does is they use like an iDrive system from 2004 with the little circle knob where you have to go through many, many different menus. It's hard to get out of said menus, and it's not touchscreen, so there's no way to manually touch it. I really don't understand it.
It's a small company, and I think that they, at the end of the day, have the least amount of budget to devote to actually building out their electronics.
But they're still pushing it. This is the way to go.
Once again, they build, I think, some of the best cars.
Yeah, they have excellent cars.
As a manufacturer of cars that are fun to drive and have really great dynamics, in all conditions, Mazda's great. But as a software company, they should really just outsource that at this point. The system, in my opinion, has been at least two generations behind ever since it was introduced. I think they were the last, along with Toyota, to go to Apple and Android, right? Because there were two reasons that a lot of companies, especially Toyota, didn't allow Apple and Google to have access to their cars, and that was because both those companies take a lot more information from the vehicle than just what you're seeing on the screen, right? So a car knows, for instance, you know, how hard it's braking, how hard it's accelerating. In an accident, there's just this wealth of information, and all that information was being, as part of Android Auto or Apple CarPlay, was being provided to both Apple and Google, and like Toyota said, no, we don't want to give that to you. I think Mazda just didn't, I'm guessing at this, once again, I'm guessing, I don't have anybody at Mazda saying this, but you know, you have to pay for that system, and I think Mazda didn't want to pay for it. So for the longest time, the question we always got was, when is Mazda going to have one of those two systems? And now, of course, they have it. But I think the reason that people wanted it so badly was because Mazda's very own infotainment system was so old and kind of crunchy that people just wanted and were starving for the ability to actually use one of the two aftermarket ones to control their infotainment.
I agree. Yeah, it's not a great system. I agree. So I think that is, I agree. No, I disagree. I think Acura is the worst.
Acura's got
Mazda, worse. You can kind of figure out Acura.
Acura is
just
trying to be
debacle.
Good, but it kind of fell off a cliff, yeah.
And I think the best is still...
How about Honda?
Honda's a little fussy.
Yeah.
It's a little bit fussy. It's better than it, now that they have the volume knobs back, it's definitely better.
Thank God, yeah.
But yeah, not super, super great. Not the worst. I mean, it's pretty easy to figure out. It just doesn't have a lot of interesting or super usable features.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, I'm sure we've forgotten some. You know, we're not actually tabulating these. We're just kind of having a free flow conversation, because we think it's more fun that way. So let us know in the comments below what you think. Are we absolutely wrong? Are we absolutely right? Maybe, you know, we have a weird perspective because we really don't, you know, like, have a car that we drive every day. We have so many test cars.
That's true, yeah. Maybe we have a very flawed perspective.
Yeah, it could be. I think maybe, you know, maybe if you own a Mazda, or own an Acura, or own a Mercedes, or own, you know, any of these vehicles, you just love the system, you learn it, and it becomes second nature.
That's right.
We never have enough time in them to actually get that far.
Yeah, for sure. And let us know what your experience with these systems has been in the comments below. And as always, check out tflcar.com for what?
More news, views, and of course, independent and honest reviews, Tommy.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Ciao.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.